You're listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara. And in the spotlight today, I have my mentor, my friend in my head, someone who is humble but is doing the work. He is in the trenches working with people who are suffering all over the world with addictions, just like me, just like you. Believe it or not, we all are addicted to something, but it becomes even more diabolical when it's substance abuse. And that's our issue today. And in the spotlight, I bring you from Los Angeles, California, Mr. Tommy Rosen. Welcome, Tommy.
Thank you, Barbara. What a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, I tell you, I've looked forward so to it. As my listening audience knows, we talk about all things cannabis in Los Angeles. And I couldn't do the service to the community necessary without talking about the addiction piece. Because what has happened in our culture is everything has a green light. It's go, 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 go. But we never see the red light until it's too late, until it's upon us, and some of us crash at the red light. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Recovery 2.0. I know that's what you have. Well, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, for the benefit of this listening audience, I want to begin by just saying, you know, in my life, I have experienced a love affair with marijuana. I came to it when I was 13. I'm now 51 years old, and I spent about 11 years in relationship with that plant, the plant of marijuana, and I would say it was a love affair and a relationship that served me at a certain point in time in my life. And I don't look at it as a black or white issue because it isn't. I truly believe different people need different things at different times, and so what I'm interested in is an open conversation where we can all reflect on our own direct experience and we can all learn whatever the right thing is for us at this particular moment for us to learn so that we can move forward and be fulfilled in our life.
Well, I appreciate your honesty and your candor, because we've all been in relationship, whether it be a bad man for us women out there, or, you know, whether it's a bad relationship for the men or whomever you are, whatever you decide that you want to do. We all have seen the warning signs, the bells and the whistles that tell us, hey, you know what, maybe I should make a left turn and not a right here. And I think what's important to know is when you said that you were in relationship, I loved how you said I was in a love affair, because we call people who do it recreationally, we call it enthusiasts here at this show. And for people who are medicinally seeking some sort of relief from pain and from cancer, AIDS, even epilepsy, those people are experimenting with what you call self-medication. Tell us a little bit about how people self-medicate.
Sure. Well, again, I'm going to come right from my own personal experience. And I love you brought up many of the relevant and important points and uses of marijuana in our world today. And again, this isn't black and white. And just because I'm a person who has, you know, recovered from addiction of a variety of different kinds, and just because I haven't smoked marijuana for 26 years, does not mean that I'm therefore anti-marijuana or unable or unwilling to look at the complexity of human behavior around this thing. So self-medication, what does that look like? Well, I think that as a child, I grew up in many respects, I had a lovely childhood, and in some respects, I had a very anxious childhood. I grew up in a home where there was a lot of confusion and a lot of difficulty emotionally. My parents were divorced, and more importantly, my parents didn't speak, and they had a lot of anger between them. And so there was always kind of a sense that there was something wrong. But you didn't exactly know what it was, and you certainly didn't know what to do about it. And when a child grows up in that kind of an environment, it creates anxiety and it creates stress.
Mm.
And when I found marijuana at 13 years old for the first time and I smoked marijuana and I felt the sensation of being high, I felt like I had taken the first deep breath of my entire life.
Mm. Because it helped to rid you of your anxiety, or because it was the first time that your gateway of your pleasure zone of your mind, your cognitive function had matched with something that released you? Which do you think it was?
Definitely the former. It relieved me of my anxiety, and it relieved me of a certain way of thinking. You might say that I was in a conditioned way of being, like we all are. We're all conditioned in some kind of way. And at first, marijuana, it relieved me of the anxiety in my body and mind. And it kind of gave me the ability to think a little bit differently about things. And at that point in time, that served me greatly. Also, we know medically, marijuana can calm a hyperactive mind. And I had a hyperactive mind, and I had a lot of the anxiety that goes along with that. So that first experience showed me, wow, you know, I didn't think of it in these terms at that time, but I now can say, well, I could treat myself for the condition of anxiety, for the challenged, conditioned way I was thinking. I could treat that with marijuana. And it wasn't that it like, oh, that takes care of my symptoms. As a 13-year-old kid, what I would have said to you is, my God, this is a lot of fun.
Mm.
Wow, I'm enjoying this, you know?
Right. And then, you know, the other thing that I think that comes with cannabis, or with what we used to know as marijuana, because it does have a new face and a new identity, same thing. But what we used to know was a social hierarchy. It was a community. It was like all your friends did it. If you didn't want to do it, then you couldn't hang out with them. Right? So that also fed the fun and the attachment and the love affair, correct?
Oh, well, absolutely. Once you start engaging in the ritual of smoking marijuana and you start to gravitate inevitably towards other people that are doing the same thing and are thinking in similar ways. Not that everybody who smokes marijuana thinks the same way, far from it. But as a kid, you start to find the other kids who are, you know, imbibing and smoking, and you hang out with them and you start to develop friendships. And, you know, the first experiences I had with girls were linked with marijuana. And so I started to have this community that you spoke of. Very strong reinforcement for continuing that behavior. And here's the interesting thing. If the moment ever comes where you say to yourself, I wonder what life might be like if I didn't smoke marijuana all the time. Or I wonder how I would be if I didn't do this particular activity. Well, one of the challenges, one of the hurdles to experiencing a life without marijuana, if you wanted to do that, is that you've built a community of people based on, in part at least, the smoking and engaging in the imbibing of marijuana. So not only would you be leaving marijuana behind, but you have a feeling that you would be leaving your community behind as well. Or why would they want to hang out with you if you weren't smoking anymore?
Absolutely. And that is, I think, part of, if I just may say, because we have a lot of people who are pro-cannabis that are listening to this show, and I think part of the medicinal value to someone who, let's say, has AIDS is to have a community of people who come by, who stop by, who bring the plant, who bring the edibles, who can tell you, well, let's try this and let's try that. So it's a whole process in the healing process of just having that community.
Yes.
When you're doing it recreationally and you're underground, which is what everybody has been, it's been underground. Now we're looking at something that's a little different. I mean, I find it disturbing when I'm sitting there watching television with my daughter about to watch a game show or something, and this young man, 14 years old, comes on and says, well, look, I'm smoking flavored banana bubblegum, and it's great. I got a problem with that. How do you feel about that? What do you think that's really saying to our children?
Well, here's the challenge, and this is what I would say to everybody. I don't advocate for marijuana or against marijuana. It would be silly, in my perspective, it'd be silly to advocate one way or the other, because nothing is correct for all people in all situations. There, you have to take into consideration the context of your life. Like I said, marijuana was really important for me at a certain point in my life, but later on, it became a problem for me. Where once it freed me, it became something that kept me from my dreams. It didn't allow my dreams to take place. I actually had to move beyond it. Hey, that's my story. And that's not anybody else's story. And I don't project my story onto another human being. If you enjoy marijuana in your life and it's bringing something positive to your life and you don't feel like it's taking something from your life, who would I be to try to tell you to stop or to do something different? So what I am for is I am for each individual making a good decision based upon their own ability to reflect and, if necessary, to self-correct and also to be able to be free. So when you see these kids, you know, or anybody who's in the middle of it and who's like, you know, this is the way. Marijuana is it. This is the greatest thing. So on and so forth. I think that's an unfortunate message because it's an incomplete message. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. It certainly does. But you know something? It's funny because as we age, you know, praise God that we gain wisdom, because experience, that's what it ends up being, is I remember so-and-so and I remember this and this happened to me. But when you're just starting out in the gate, you know, they do say that there's a couple of statistics that people need to know. One of them is that if you've been using cannabis over 6 years, there is an opportunity for cannabis to turn psychotropic, meaning that it can cause you to have hallucinations, to be paranoid, depending on what your strain is, whether it's depending on what is on the marijuana, if it has pesticides or things like that. And the other thing is their delivery system. Because when I was a kid, it was puff, puff, pass, and everybody was, it was the stoners, and the smokers, and the athletes, and you had to pick one. You know, so now we have a situation where there is shatter, there are pins, there are vape pins, there are cookies, all these edibles, there are gummy bears, candy. It comes in so many delivery forms that it is mind-blowing. What's your thought of that?
Well, you're getting into a realm of this, you know, multiverse that did not exist when you know the last time I smoked marijuana was 1991. You know, none of what you just spoke of existed. None of it.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. We had strains and we had, you know, things were grown in certain regions and indoors or outdoors and, you know, hydroponic or you know, not. There was a lot of interest and a lot of, you know, early science going into the growing of this plant, but nothing like what it is today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I would encourage everybody to try to do in whatever their decision-making process is in life is you have to be able to make decisions for yourself that lead to the fulfillment of your life and that lead to the fulfillment of your life's purpose. I can guarantee you, here's one thing I can tell you. Whether you smoke marijuana or engage with it in any way or not, you can't smoke your way into heaven. and you cannot abstain your way into heaven either. You are going to have to figure out what's right for you, and you're going to have to develop yourself as a human being. If marijuana can help you with that and it doesn't cause you to pay prices, I am not one to comment on that either way. That's a decision between you, yourself, the God of your understanding.
Now that was very, not to interrupt, but that sure. was very, there's a couple of things you've said, and we've got 2 minutes before we go to break. You said self-correct and understanding what's right for you, and being able to understand if you're being exempt from paying the penalty, because yes. there is a penalty for a poor decision, unfortunately, in life. A lot of people behind marijuana, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, have paid enormous penalties. I mean, they paid with their life. When we come back, I'd like you to explain to us, what is a gateway drug? What does that mean? Why do they say that cannabis is a gateway drug? And then I want to talk a little bit more about triggers. I want to talk about opiates. I want to talk about alcohol. I want to talk about my favorite drug, caffeine. I want to talk about my daughter's favorite drug, video games, because yes. they all operate on the pleasure system of our mind. And they all have an addiction, even gambling. So anyway, we're going to take a break. You are listening to Tommy Rosen with Recovery 2.0. I'm your host, Barbara, and this is LA Miracle Care. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Tommy, I want to thank you for being here with us. In our first set, we got a chance to really talk a little bit about cannabis, but I know that, tell us, what is it to be what I would consider a recovery guru? What does that mean?
Well, I'm just going to go right to the history of the word guru. A guru is just simply a teacher or a teaching that carries you from darkness into light. That's a Hindu word originally. And it basically means moving from darkness into light. So to be a recovery guru just means someone who helps a person to recover from the darkness and move into the light. And here we are talking about, you know, cannabis, but we're also talking about addiction in general. And I think, you know, anybody who's alive on the planet today, more or less, we all basically want the same things, even though we may not think that. We want to be loved, and we want to be able to love. We want to be free. Mm-hmm. We want to help others be free. When most, you know, in my opinion, when any non-psychotic person sees somebody being preyed upon or manipulated, we like to intervene and do something to help that person. Mm-hmm. If we see people who are minorities or who are being picked on in some way, we like to intervene and support them and protect them. I think this is true basically across the world. I really do. I believe in the goodness of human beings. And so what we're really discussing is, how can a human being reach his or her fullest potential? And the discussion of cannabis or any kind of psychoactive drug comes into that discussion. does imbibing in cannabis or any other drug or alcohol or behavior that changes our consciousness, is there relevance to that? When is there relevance to that? When is too much? When is it right for somebody but not right for somebody else? Like, these are all the questions that we're asking, and they're great questions. And so we're in this world of, you know, trying to help people to move forward so that they can find fulfillment in life. Right. And, you know, a lot of people get off track. A lot of people get off track with substance. I know that my initial, you know, foray into cannabis was a positive one for me. And ultimately it led, or it allowed me to go down a road where I wasn't actually learning from and dealing with the core issues of my life. It was supporting me in changing my emotional state. It was helping me to change my mental conditioning, but I never actually got to deal with the core issues of my life until I put it down. And it's the strangest thing that once I put marijuana down, and other substances as well, that's when the core issues of my life came up and bubbled to the surface. And that's a painful thing.
Yes.
And so there I am in early recovery, not feeling so great. And I'm like, wow, maybe I should just go back to smoking marijuana. Maybe I should just go back to these other behaviors because this is painful.
So do you call those triggers? Is that like a trigger? Is that something we need to be mindful of, that once we make two steps forward, there's always a pullback, and that pullback, that rear view thing, can be painful, and that can set us back? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there are many things in the world that can be a trigger, and a trigger just means it reminds you of emotionally of something that took place previously in the past.
Mm.
So you know, it can be a positive or a negative. So for example, to this day, if I walk by a bakery and I smell fresh bread being baked, it makes me think of my grandmother.
Yes.
And that's a positive memory for me. And so I'm like, oh, that, you know, like, wow, like that has an emotional, I have an emotional reaction just by smelling that bread. I'm triggered by it.
Yes.
But what we talk about as a trigger on the negative side would be, for example, if I walk by, you know, a bunch of people smoking pot, that could trigger somebody who was still in the position of, on some part of their psyche, they still want to smoke pot, or they have a memory of it being a positive thing. There's a positive association there that could trigger their desire, and that could become a craving and a mental obsession, and eventually them taking the action to actually smoke pot. So, and you know, it's not a problem. Unless it's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, I wanted to interject here. You know, it's very funny, but many of us, you know, everybody knows I'm from Oakland. And at one point in Oakland, you know, it was a profession to be a drug dealer. I mean, in the 80s and early 90s, it was horrific. And people made that choice to, you know, a lot of them are in jail or have been killed or murdered. But it was, so, you know, you might know a kingpin or two in the neighborhood. The point that I'm making is they always said, you know, never use your supply, you know. And so the mantra was, I don't use, you use, but I make money off of it. But Tommy, the interesting thing is they were more hooked to the money than the client was hooked to the drug, you know? And so I worry about the people who now are in a position of legalizing cannabis because they plan to make $15 billion just this year in 88 cities in Los Angeles. And so I know there's going to be a hook onto the money. What do you think about that?
Well, let's look ahead. Let's look into the future for a minute together. Okay. What's going to happen is marijuana is going to be legalized in every state in the United States for sure, across Canada, ultimately across the world. That's coming. And anybody who doesn't think that's coming, I think is not reading the signs. what you have now is you have a tremendous amount of money, and I mean old money, money from the current power structure, being poured into the growing of marijuana, the marketing of marijuana, the communication, positive communications about marijuana. You know, what you're going to see are the major corporations and government bodies getting involved deeply in the selling of this plant in its various forms. That's coming. Now, the good news about that is freedom. If you want to imbibe, you're going to have the ability, you're going to have the choice. And so I'm a pro-choice person in general in life. Mm-hmm. I think human beings ought to have the choice to live the way they desire to live. Mm-hmm. The not so good news about that is you're going to have the same people that have marketed alcohol, cigarettes, food products that are not good for you. The same marketers who are incredible communicators, who are unbelievably talented at getting you to do something, right. they are now going to be putting their money and their time and their words behind getting you to smoke this kind of marijuana, that kind of marijuana, eating this kind of edible, that kind of edible. It's going to be marketed to kids, whether anybody, you know, I don't care. Just like alcohol was marketed to kids, even more so with marijuana and edibles. So what you're going to have is marijuana is going to enter the picture in a much, much, much bigger way than we have ever previously imagined. And so what you're going to have is you're going to have some people, like there's a few friends of mine who smoke pot still, and they've never given it up all these years. Mm-hmm. And a few of them are doing pretty well in life. They've had families and it seems to work for them in the way that they've related to it. It seems to work for them. Never could have worked for me. And most people that smoke pot long-term, in my direct observation, feel that something is missing.
Yes.
That it hasn't ultimately served them, at least in the way that they've approached it or the way they've imbibed with it. It has gotten in the way of their life in some way, shape, or form. Well, this is going to be entering the world now in a huge way. And our children and their undeveloped brains, we now know that the human brain is not developing fully until 25 years old.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what this newfound widespread experiment with marijuana is going to do, but surely it's going to affect our kids. And we're, you know, everybody hopes for a positive outcome. The people who are staunch marijuana advocates will say, this is calming, it's more peaceful, it's going to create more peace in our society. And I really, really, really hope that is true. Ultimately, I come back to what I said to you before. Marijuana is not a solution to a human being's problems in life.
Right.
It can give you a glimpse of something. It can help in certain ways for a period of time within a certain context. It will have a relevance in certain people's lives, not everybody. Some people can benefit from it for a little while. Some people won't be able to. Some people will do better with it than others, and those will become the advocates. And everyone else will just sort of have to figure out and hopefully have the ability to make a choice. Is this really helpful for me? Or am I being swayed by the powerful marketing engines that swayed the generation before me to drink alcohol to excess, that swayed the generation before them to drink, to smoke cigarettes, to create a tremendous amount of sickness in our society?
Right.
Or are we going to be able to think freely, really think freely, and learn from our experience, direct experience, and not buy into the hype? Because right now, if I buy into the hype, let me tell you what happens, Barbara. I think marijuana cures everything. Marijuana cures everything in the world. If I buy into the hype, that's what I'm being told.
Mm-hmm.
It cures everything. And people who are against marijuana will say, marijuana has no relevance at all. It has no benefit. It only could be a bad thing. Well, I don't believe either one of those positions, because that's not been my direct experience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I urge everybody to be very careful about buying into the hype of what this is and what this isn't. And for anyone to think that they need marijuana in their life to live a great life, that is simply false.
Well, that brings me to the point. And I mean, that was so profound what you said, but it needed to be said. And I think that once, okay, let's shift the conversation just a bit. Okay, so once you go to the doctor, you present yourself and you are in disease, there's a problem, a disorder, your leg hurts, your arm hurts, you need surgery, whatever it be. And you get a prescription. This is the American way. This is our federal government's way. You get this prescription that comes from the doctor. Excuse me. You use the drug as it's prescribed. You know, maybe one pill every 6 hours, and you've got 36. At the end of your 36th pill, you find yourself not thinking anymore about the pain, but now you need the pill. You go back to the doctor. The doctor says, you know, I'm going to give you 15 more and a couple of samples out of my drawer. And then after that, you're fine. Now you're hooked on opiates. Mm. Tell us about that. How do we know, and why does it happen so fast? And if our government is approving this system, why is it taking out Middle America and some of the people that we love that are dear to us?
Okay. So the first thing I want to say is now we're into the opiate situation and the opiate crisis. So this is a very, very different thing than marijuana, and I don't want to confuse the two. So what I'm about to say is about opiates. This has nothing to do with cannabis. This is a different thing. The federal government agencies that have made it possible for us to be in this opiate crisis, that have contributed to this either knowingly or unknowingly, are not to be trusted on this issue. Now, that's not a conspiracy theory or even an anti-government theory. All it is to say the people who make the decisions about what drugs are good for us and what drugs are not good for us really fucked up when it came to OxyContin and opiates. It cannot be said any more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
They made a mistake that cost the lives of potentially a million American people.
Mm.
A million American people since 1995. Probably a lot more than that. But that's how many people, you know, who arguably have died in connection with the opiate crisis. How could you come back from that? A million people. You have created so much pain, so much suffering in an individual, so much suffering in families, the loss of loved ones, and the pain of people still alive who are living in addiction as the direct result of governmental sanctioned over-the-counter drugs that are sold. We're talking about OxyContin here and then all the mess that goes with it. And so what I can say is don't look to the federal government. When they say this is good for you, this is not good for you, I beg of everybody, you take opiates only under the most extreme circumstances. And the second you can get off of them, you flush that shit down the toilet.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is not a joke. This stuff is bigger than the human nervous system. This is why it happens so quickly. The human nervous system is not set up to handle what is coming down the pipe, no pun intended, in those drugs. Those pills are stronger than your nervous system. And very quickly, your nervous system becomes... and your brain will become addicted to them. And I don't care who you are, what your background is, what your family is, how strong your church and your community are. If you become addicted to these drugs, you are not going to be able to fight it on your own. And if you try to fight it on your own, like so many people before you, you're likely to die from it. But first, you're going to get a good ass whooping. And so this has been a dreadful blemish, a blight in our history as a country. It doesn't get any worse than this. This was about lying, manipulation, fraud, and it cost the lives of ultimately a million people. Many, many more will die. We lost 60,000 in 2016, I guess, 60,000. So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, you are going to have to figure this stuff out for yourself. You do not want to be taking drugs as a solution to your problems. Right. You want to use food as a medicine. You want to clean up your diet.
Right.
You want to move your body and exercise.
Yes. So I want to, we got to take a quick break. Everybody, we're here. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure. And my guest in the spotlight is Tommy Rosen, speaking to you from Los Angeles. He is with Recovery 2.0, and we'll be right back.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we're back, and I'm here with Tommy Rosen, and this is the best. I mean, it's unbelievable how riveting and how you bring it with no sugarcoating, because I think America needs to hear this. I think we, for so long, have had an opinion about someone who's taken addiction fall. Oh, well, you know, that's Cousin Johnny. And he, don't have him at dinner because he's addicted. Or, oh, my so-and-so. Or maybe the family member becomes invisible because either they remove themselves because they know that their addiction is so bad, or they've been barred from the house because they've already done horrific, embarrassing things in the home, and now they can't come over. So my point is, why do some of us fall so heavily? Is it DNA? Is it gene structure? Did our parents have something that they could have told us about their previous addiction that could have saved us from this?
Yes. Well, here's part of the challenge that people face. As much as we want to help a loved one, when you're stuck in severe addiction, really when you're stuck in addiction at all, your behavior isn't always that great. In fact, addicts, you know, especially heroin addicts or opiate addicts, their behavior is unbearable for other people to handle. So you want to help this person, but even being around this person and watching them hurt themselves and then watching them lie to you and try to manipulate you to get more drugs or money, it's very difficult to help someone in that situation. So nobody faults the family for not knowing how to deal with a loved one in their family that's really stuck in chronic addiction. It is one of the most painful and difficult things to go through. However, there are some things that we know, generally speaking, that can be helpful for the family. So I'll just name a few of those right now. Number one, if you're in that situation, understand that you can't fight addiction. You cannot fight addiction. You will lose it. You will lose every time. If you say to yourself things like, I can't believe they are still doing this to themselves, or why don't they just stop, or wow, this terrible thing happened to them, now they're going to have to stop. Anytime you think that thought, you're about to be amazed at the staying power of addiction. So first of all, don't underestimate what you're up against. This thing will take a human being as far and far beyond what you think is possible. Once you understand that, then you know you need help. So how do you get help? Well, you get help from people who understand addiction. You get help from other family members maybe who have been through it, or other people who have been through it and have found success in recovery. You get help because you come to Recovery 2.0, our organization, and you become a member of r20.com, which is our website. You get help to position yourself to be of maximum use to that person. Remember this, the opposite of addiction is human connection. But you ask yourself, how can I be connected to this person when they're behaving so badly? What you can do is you can set a good boundary. You can say this, I love you, I see you hurting yourself, and I can't support you in hurting yourself. If you're ever ready to get help, I'll be here for you. No matter what, I'll be here for you. But I can't help you and enable this life to continue the way you're hurting yourself. So count me out. But I will always be here for you whenever you want to make a move toward health. Now that is a clear and beautiful thing to be able to say to someone you love. And with help from community, with help from 12-step programs, with help from churches and synagogues and mosques and other spiritual paths, you can find healing from this thing as a family and at the level of the individual. So
now you said something there, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I want to ask you, because I know you've traveled the globe. I mean, if we want to talk about someone who has been open to trying to travel to places to find the best that they have to offer in terms of spiritual guidance, to be able to consume that and then bring it back to the States and share it with us. I mean, this is what you're known for. And it's very interesting because all the things you mentioned brings back a connection with the Creator. So do you think a person can have a breakthrough and quit without having some kind of spiritual connection?
I think it's interesting, the by definition, if a person has a breakthrough, if a person has a transformation, what it means is at the level of their thinking, at the level of their behavior, at the level of their emotions, there's been a shift. Now your thinking and your behavior and your emotions are not physical things. Those are spiritual things. They're not in the physical world. You can't grab onto your thinking. You can't grab onto your behavior. You can look at it and observe it, but you can't nail it down. Everything changes for that transformation to take place. So by definition, it's spiritual in nature. It will also affect the physical, mental, and emotional realm, but it's spiritual in nature. This doesn't mean you have to believe in God or not believe in God or believe in this kind of God or that kind of God or this path or that path. None of that matters. You are a human being. You breathe. If you didn't breathe, you're not alive. End of story. Where does your breath come from? Where does your heartbeat come from? Nobody knows, but it's there. You depend on it every day. So when you have a spiritual transformation or a transformation that of a what seems to be a physical nature, like, okay, I was 250 pounds and I lost 70 pounds and now I'm 180. To go through a physical transformation like that cannot take place purely on the physical realm. That has to be a spiritual transformation. That has to be a mental transformation. That has to be a reorganization of the way you look at food, the way you look at your life. So all of these things, these include a spiritual component. It always includes a spiritual component. All of human life, all of life includes a spiritual component. So you can't look at these things as if they're separate.
So do you think that when we self-medicate, and I love how you started out, Tommy, you started out telling us about how you were as a child and what happened and how, you know, not having real answers and how there was an undercurrent of disconnection that it caused you to have anxiety. We noticed that many of our young children in our society in America, they may not be your children or my children, but children in school are under medication. They're under psychotropic drugs. They're being given Ritalin and all these different drugs because they've been misdiagnosed in the beginning with things like ADHD and all these disruptive disorders. And so once that label goes on the child and the child is incapable of listening, and it could be more than likely the fact that the child has been learning for the past 4 or 5 years with a cell phone, in solitude, with a Game Boy, with the PSY 360 Plus, and you know, right? And yes. the big screen at home, and that really is the babysitter. And now all of a sudden you want me to sit down and color? Are you kidding?
Right.
Give me my Game Boy. I need to play. So yes. And then there are violent games. And then it takes away your care or your emotional attachment to the person, or it's a sexual game that is raping or demeaning females. Tell us what you think about what's happening to our children by the video game phenomenon, which is opening up the pleasure gateway, which is priming them for addiction.
Yep. Well, you pretty much summed it up right there. We're in a lot of trouble. This is not looking good. The outcome is not looking good right now. We're going to have to change some things. I guess what's behind it, ultimately, we're talking about the system once again. And the system is not any one particular person or even a group of people. It's that we're in a collectively, I'm looking at my cell phone right in front of me. And I'm like, you know what? I use this thing more than I used to. It's become more important in my life than it used to be. And I consider myself a fairly conscious person, but this has happened because we're all in this hypermobile, hyperfast, achieve way of being. And it's now bleeding down to our kids to the extent where kids are under so much pressure to perform and to achieve, to get into the right schools, to become the right kind of person. Of course, they never get to really experience what they're like themselves. It's always a projected image of who they think they're supposed to be. Who projected the image? Society projected the image.
Mm.
Now, when you are, you know, confused and overwhelmed and stressed, what happens is you don't think so clearly. You don't see so clearly. You can't focus. And all of a sudden, there's a label for that. ADD, ADHD. What do we do about that? Well, we put our kids on speed. All right, so now you've got a kid who is already stressed, already anxious, but now you've given them a drug called speed. Let's not make any mistake about it. Adderall is speed. Okay, this is just an upper. We learned in the 50s. And many times before that, speed is not good for human beings. It'll help you with your performance in the short term, but it's going to take a mental, psychological, and emotional toll on you for the rest of your life until you stop. Unfortunately, that's where we're headed. You have to perform. You're stressed. You can't focus. Take speed. Mm. I mean, it's some dark shit right now.
You are absolutely right. Is it that we in America don't see it, or are we slowly coming to the realization that something needs to change or something needs to give with our kids, but yet and still the ball is rolling down the hill and we can't catch it? Do you think that's it?
I think there's a combination of things going on here, but primarily it comes down to the fact that we are disconnected from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has shown us how to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
No one has shown us how to sit down. No one has shown us how to look within ourselves. Everybody's so scared to slow down and look inside. And so we stay busy and we keep doing and we avoid ourselves and we're just making it worse.
Right.
And all the spiritual paths have said the same thing. Whether you're talking about any form of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Sikhism, Buddhism, Hinduism, all the world's major religions say the same thing. Behold, the kingdom of heaven is within. As within, so without. These are messages that have been coming to us for thousands of years. The people who get that message, who learn how to sit down, who learn to be still, who learn to meditate and to calm their mind, they're the most well-adjusted, the happiest, and the most powerful people in the world today. And by power, I'm not talking about anything that has anything to do with financial success. I'm talking about true power, the power to control your own mind and the power to be free, where you're beyond manipulation and where you can see clearly and your senses and your body and your mind are under control and you get to live creatively and spontaneously and you don't need marijuana and you don't need psychedelics and you don't need opiates and you don't need Adderall. You don't need any of that. Because you're eating well and you're tending to the needs of life and the challenges of humanity are not too much for you. They're within the ability that you have cultivated to manage all of that and to give back and to connect and to love and to build from there.
All right. That was profound. And that is why I am part of Recovery 2.0. That is why... You know, I seek out positive mentorship because even though, you know, I'm in the fall or the autumn of my life, if they want to say, you know, I've had a full experience. I've had the full gamut. But I still recognize that I need to be mentored. I need a teacher. I need someone who has a greater light that has a greater understanding and is still seeking mentorship himself. And that is what you get when you are in fellowship with Recovery 2.0. I want to ask you, we've got 3 minutes left. Okay, so we want to talk a little bit about how to contact you and that. But I want to ask you just quickly. All right, so do you think humans are better to leave the smoking? When we go through recovery, should we just be free? We should seek to be free of coffee, cigarettes, alcohol, everything?
Like I said, everything has a relevance within a certain context for certain people at certain times. Now, cigarettes, well, you know that takes a toll. Everybody knows it. There's a real price to pay for smoking cigarettes. What does it do for you? Well, nicotine, it grounds you. It's a grounding drug. So it brings you out of your head and down into the body, particularly when you smoke, when you bring smoke into your lungs. So I'm looking at it from all angles. I'm saying to everybody I speak with, the sooner you can quit smoking, the better. But you might as well at least understand the way that it serves you, and you should understand the prices that you pay. And most importantly, you should ask yourself this question. Is there a way I can benefit in the way that nicotine as a drug can serve me? For example, if it grounds me, can I ground myself in a way that is less destructive? Can I ground myself in a way that may even be productive? And if you come study with me, you're going to learn very quickly. There's many ways to ground yourself that will strengthen the system, bring vitality, and build immunity rather than demote you physically.
Wow.
With caffeine, I'll just simply say, everybody's different. There's no one way. You know, I know some people who drink caffeine, they start sweating, they get anxious, they get heart palpitations. These people should not be drinking caffeine. I know other people that have really good experiences with caffeine. They love it. It's something they want to have in their life. Who am I to say they shouldn't have it? I just say that the same for everybody. You should explore why you make certain decisions and ask yourself always, is there a better way for me to do this? And is this getting in the way of who I'm trying to be?
Right. That's beautiful. All right. So inquiring minds want to know, how do we contact, how do we interface? Maybe there's somebody within the sound of our voice that is really having issues with addiction. How can people contact you and be a part of your community?
Sure. Well, the first thing is we have our 10th online conference coming up from June 6th to June 10th. It's totally free. 25 hours of interviews that I did with experts in the fields of medicine, science, spirituality, yoga teachers, meditation instruction, nutritionists, really looking at every area of human life. You will not want to miss this. Go online and register. It's completely free. That's r20.com/conference. So R, the letter R, the number 2, the number 0.com/conference. And you can sign up there for free and get to know who we are, what we do. And you can join our membership anytime at r20.com. And we've got just endless resources to help you through any challenge that you might be facing when it comes to addiction.
Well, you know something, I just want to say, everybody, r20.com/conference, starting June 6th. You have been listening to Tommy Rosen. Tommy, thank you so much. You must come back and
I'd
let us
to.
Know after one of your wonderful world tours. So we'd love you to come back and tell us a little bit about what you found out. We would love to know what you know to be for sure and for real. We thank you for being on our show. Everybody, you've been listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara, and we are on America Out Loud.